And it's about 24 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock. Of course, you're at the Roadhouse here on WTIP 90.7. We're joined by the telephone right now by Walt Hampton. Walt is an adventure photographer. He's a high-altitude mountaineer and attorney who's conquered four of the world's seven summits, including Denali, Aconcagua, Kilimanjaro, and Elbrus. He's a long-distance runner. He's just finished his first two ultramarathons this summer at age 54. He's also an executive coach and motivational speaker. His new book, Journeys on the Edge, Living a Life That Matters, is about facing demons, moving forward in spite of fear and limitations, and finding balance in seizing the moments. It's really great to have Walt on the air. How you doing, Walt?
I'm doing fine, Buck. It's so nice to join you. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on the Roadhouse. You know, I'm talking as though we're quite familiar, and we are, because we met on Denali itself.
We met in a high and wild place, Buck, where it was cold and inhospitable, but it was a great adventure to share with you.
It sure was quite an adventure. I'm going to put you, to start this conversation, I'd like to put you back on that summit of Denali. That's, of course, the highest point in North America, and it's, as you can describe it better than I can, especially after I read your book. It's when you were there, you also were there with your wife, Anne, and your son, Luke. It was your third attempt to climb the mountain. You found yourself on the summit in 2010. On that third attempt, can you give a little context for that and tell folks just how you felt at that time?
Oh, it was an overwhelming sense of joy and accomplishment. It had been a dream of mine since I was 13 years old, and it was something that I had thought about and fantasized about and dreamed about and planned. And then, as you alluded to, tried twice before, only to be turned back. And I had been turned back the second time, just a year before you and I had met. And coming down that sharp ridgeline that you know so well, the tears just streamed down my face. And I thought, I wonder whether at age 53 then, 52, I had to give up this dream that I had held in my heart for 40 years. So standing on the summit after 18 days on the mountain and a 12 or 14-hour push to the summit was just an overwhelming sense of joy and satisfaction. And to be there with my best friend, my wife, and my son was just the greatest bonus you could have.
It was quite an accomplishment, as you just described. And to go from there, to try to put it in to feelings, into words, into a narrative, is something that's another challenge in itself. Of course, your book is not really a narrative of the trip up the mountain, but rather it's a trip that you've taken your whole life to get to that point where you could see your dream realized.
I think that's right, Buck. Certainly the story of my own dream of attaining Denali weaves in and out of Journeys on the Edge, but it also speaks to the wider journeys that each of us have in our lives and all of the mountains that each of us have, whether we're outdoors people or have other avocations or vocations. Each of us are challenged in our own way with mountains that we have to climb, and so it speaks to those journeys as well.
The book is called Journeys on the Edge. Can you tell folks kind of what you mean by the edge? What does that mean in your life?
Well, when I was young to the photography business, I had the great honor and privilege of studying with the late adventure photographer Galen Rowell. And Galen was a tremendous outdoor adventure photographer, and his mantra was life is an action sport. Galen used to say that the best photographs were made on the edges of things, on the edge of light and darkness, on the edge of land and sea, on the edge of the clearing storm. And I think my belief is that life is most poignantly lived on the edge. The edge that we all travel between the ups and the downs, the good and the bad, the light and the dark. And when we can really poignantly and with awareness and intention and purpose live our lives on that edge, we are living most fully in that moment and fulfilling our highest potential in the world.
Was there a time in your life when you felt that you would never get to that dream or many of the other dreams that you've had in your life?
Oh, I think so, Buck. I like so many of us, have suffered with the challenge of divorce. After my first attempt on Denali, life shifted for me. You know the intention, the intensity of that space. And when I came back to my life as it was, and that was back in the early 90s, a lot of my life began to change, and my marriage unraveled, and I had had four kids at the time, and I envisioned, in a sense, that when my life unraveled, I'd be the traditional single dad. I would have my kids on weekends and maybe 2 weeks in the summer, and I thought, woo-hoo, maybe I'll have a chance to travel even more, adventure even more. And I was completely blindsided by how the process unfolded. I ended up with my kids. I ended up being a single dad, raising my kids on my own. And in those early days of being a single parent, of trying to balance it all in my life, and trying to run a business, develop a professional practice, make school lunches, go to soccer games, run kids around, make dinners and fall into bed exhausted at night, I thought, oh my God, I will never get back to the big mountains of the world that nurture my soul. And I really, for a long time, thought all was lost.
In your book, I should mention that you are an attorney, but you also spend an awful lot of time as a motivational speaker, as somebody who's a life coach for others. That seems to fit in really well reading this book and the thought that you put into your life.
Well, I think it's one of the things I see when I work with folks, Buck, is that so many live lives. Thoreau said many live lives of quiet desperation. I think that perhaps overstates it. I think many of us live lives that are just quietly unsettling or quietly dissatisfying. We have these great visions when we're young of how our lives will be, who we're going to marry, where we're going to go, what our lives are going to be, what great adventures we're going to have. And then we get whacked upside the head by this thing called reality, and we get caught in routine. We get caught in these day in and day out coils that leave us feeling as if we're an extra in Bill Murray's Groundhog Day. And life is not what we once imagined it to be. And so in my work, it's important to bring that sense of purpose back, that sense of imagination, and the ability to live on purpose, with intention, and with joy, I think is within all of our grasp if we will take the conscious steps to create that in our lives.
You know, there's a passage in your book when you talk about a little story about training a baby elephant that I thought was real to that point. Walt, could you do you recall the story, and could you fill our folks in?
I love that story, Buck. The trainers of elephants, when an elephant is small and just born, it will put a stake into the ground and tether the elephant to the stake. And the elephant, being small at that time, thinks that it's caught. And as it grows up, it learns that it's just staked to the ground. And as it grows into a large elephant, of course, it has no idea that if it were just to tug a little harder, it could free itself and run free. And so the elephant grows up all its life thinking that it's staked to that one spot. And I think that's so true for many of us. We don't tug hard enough to realize that all along we have been free.
And of course, you hit on a lot of other things that really tie folks down. And one of them is just, you know, the fear to try, the fear to get out there and make that first. I think in one part of the book you describe, that whole portion of the book is about eating the elephant, taking that first bite.
One small step at a time. And Buck, you know from our mountaineering, how true that is. There are so many times, even after 40 years of mountaineering, I'll get to the base of a new mountain, I'll look up and think, oh my God, how are we ever going to climb that mountain? And it's one small step at a time. This book, people ask me how I wrote this book. I have a pretty full life, and many people say, wow, I'd love to write a book. I did it about an hour a day for a long time. One small step at a time. And I think that's what's essential to any great venture in our lives. Darren Hardy, the publisher of Success Magazine, wrote a wonderful book called The Compound Effect. And he speaks about it, you know, with using the metaphor of the old hand pump, one of those metal pumps that you see at campgrounds. And he says the important thing is just keep on pumping the handle. And if you think about the pump, you pump and pump and pump, nothing comes out. And if you pump a little longer, maybe a little trickle comes out. And if you stop, all is lost, of course. You have to start all over again. But if you keep on pumping, eventually this huge torrent of outcome happens. And that's the way it is. If you just stay at it so much as possible.
You know, I think all of us at some point think about, you know, I should write a book, or it's kind of a dream for many people. It's also a good example of something that failure can be a part of, that fear can be a part of, but mainly, as you mentioned, you know, just getting down and doing it and having a plan that's going to get you started and keep you going.
Well, I'm going to be one of the keynote speakers next week of the Idaho Book Extravaganza, and the title of my talk, they told me, is making your life experience into a story. And the truth of the matter is, and we forget this, I think we forget it more in the Twitter age and Facebook age than ever before, that stories form the fabric of who we are. And each of us have these wonderful stories of our lives. And we're all on this great journey on the edge together, and each of us can share with one another stories. And stories make us who we are, and enrich the fabric of all of our lives. And so, you know, any of your listeners who are out there who are thinking about wanting to write a book and don't know where to turn for their material, these stories of our lives that form the basis of it.
We're speaking with Walt Hampton, and Walt has just completed a book called Journeys on the Edge. Walt is an adventure photographer. He's a lawyer. He is also a motivational speaker and a high-altitude mountaineer. Well, we were just talking about how you dig in to do something and stories, and it reminds me of one of the stories that kind of grabbed me in your book, and that was your Buddhist story about that has a lot to do with having a plan. Do you recall that the Buddhist story that was in there?
Which was the story, Buck?
That one was, let me find it quick for you. That was the Buddhist story about the man on a horse.
Ah, yes.
Do you want me to refresh you a little bit? You have a lot of stories in your book, you know.
I know. Pull it out for me, and I'll...
There's a Buddhist story about a man on a horse. As the man rides past his friend who's standing on the side of the road, the friend yells, "Where are you going?" And the rider turns to his friend and yells, "I don't know, ask the horse."
I do love that story. And that's one of the scary things, of course, about our lives, is that we get on these horses that carry us along, or on these jobs that carry us forward, and all of a sudden we're years down the path and we don't know how we've gotten there. I think it was the late, great Jim Rohn who said, if you don't have a plan of your own, you'll fall into someone else's plan, and guess what they've got planned for you? Not much. The notion is that we have the capacity to design our lives the way we want to, if we'll step up and choose the horse we want to ride. And so many of us find ourselves not doing that. I remember when I was a young law student at Cornell Law School, I had just landed at law school, and I had always envisioned having my own practice. And before I knew it, I was sucked into the interviewing process of interviewing for big firms. And I ended up at a big firm, and I was immediately miserable, and I couldn't figure out why. It was because I had ridden this horse that I had never intended to jump on.
And there you were.
And there I was.
So, yeah, what do you do? You've got some place that you kind of, now that was what you hoped for, but there you were, and you didn't want to be there. That must be a common story in many people's lives.
I think it is, you know, because so many times, and I know particularly in this economy, young folks are coming out of school, they're loaded with debt, instead of deliberately choosing the direction they want to go, they may fall into a job or to a career that's not quite right, and as you well know, Buck, the years pass quickly. And before you know it, you've got kids, you've got debt, you've got mortgages, and you're locked. You feel, because I don't think you truly are, you feel locked into where you are, and then you feel trapped. And then it takes a great deal of courage to stop the horse and say, this isn't working.
You know, your wife, Ann, who is a remarkable woman, was a long-distance runner when you met her. You were a mountaineer and are a mountaineer, and she became one. But I believe that part of the pact was that you had to start running a little longer than you were before.
Well, I was never a distance runner, Buck.
Uh-huh.
The longest I'd ever run before I met Ann was about 8 or 10 miles, and that was the deal. She said, if I'm going to do this mountaineering stuff, you're going to become a distance runner. And so last year, this is 2011, last year, 2010, I ran my very first marathon.
Now, I know a lot of folks that when that happens to them, it's such a dramatic part of their life, and it had to be for you too.
The running?
To be successful at a marathon, at an ultra marathon, to be able to take that challenge and push your way through it.
First of all, it's an incredible challenge. I thought the first time I ran 12 miles, I thought I was going to die. What I found as I pushed out further, however, is that, and it's a wonderful metaphor for life, as I pushed out further, I discovered that during a long run, once your body has begun to have at least a minimal level of shape, that you go through these incredible ups and downs and highs and lows. In the same run, you can feel like you're flowing like a river and feel like your legs are bound together by piano wire. It's astounding, the emotional highs, the physical highs and lows that can occur across distance. But to have accomplished that, and I had to follow a plan and set the plan out. It was small steps over a long period of time. When we accomplished it, it was an amazing sensation.
And that, as you mentioned, that's something that needs to happen to be successful, to live a dream. Those are kind of the steps you have to take in any event that's your dream.
Absolutely. And, you know, to have a plan, to work the plan, not to be caught up in someone else's plan. This past summer, as you alluded to, Ann and I trained for two ultramarathons, an ultramarathon being anything longer than the 26.2. And so we did a 50K, 31 miles, and we did the Vermont 50, 50 miles. We did a 16-week training program, and it became like a part-time job training for this for the ultramarathon. But it was also great fun. It was a great way for us to connect. I mean, when you go out for 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday or a Sunday with your partner, it's a great way to connect and spend some time. And when we worked the plan, we were successful.
We've been talking with Walt Hampton, and Walt just completed a book called Journeys on the Edge. Walt, this is a remarkable book. It's a remarkable book in many ways, but it's very much a motivational book as well for folks to be able to learn maybe how to grab their life how to grab a life that maybe isn't where they want it to be, and get it back on track. How important do you feel the dreams are for folks that really need to make that an important part of their life? How does that fit in with everything else that's there?
I think our dreams are the deepest longings of our heart, Buck. I think our dreams formulate the essence of who we are. I think that we are all called to our highest place of fulfilling our dreams and our lives. That's where we live most fully. That's where we live most intentionally. That's where the way in which we can bring our gifts most genuinely and most authentically to the world if we're living those deepest part of our lives.
That's great. I think we should leave it right there, Walt. Can you tell folks where they can find your book and also where they could find a website to learn more about you?
Absolutely. My website book is pretty easy. It's www.walthampton.com. That's www.walthampton.com. And folks can still order the book through my website directly and still receive signed copies through the site. And the book was just released on Amazon, so the book is available on Amazon, and it was just also uploaded as a Kindle version. So either through the website, www.walthampton.com, or at Amazon.
Walt Hampton, it's been great talking to you. I hope to talk to you again very soon. It's been nice to have you on the program, and best of luck with the book and all of your other endeavors, and be sure to say hi to Ann and Luke.
I will do that, Bob. Thanks so much for having me.